This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
You're jamming your favorite song, and while you aren't missing a beat, you could be missing a signal from your body. It's an SOS from your kidneys, and it doesn't sound like music at all. It's silent. High blood pressure, type 2 diabetes, and other risk factors can quietly stress the kidneys, leading to negative impacts on the heart. That's why you should ask your doctor about a simple urine test called UACR. Most miss the signal for hidden kidney disease and related heart risk. You shouldn't. Visit detecttheSOS.com today to learn more.
This is an Odyssey original.
This is Coronavirus Daily. I'm Charles Feldman.
And I'm Mike Simpson from the KNX Odyssey Studios in Los Angeles. Hotspot for the pandemic now in the U.S. is Florida. They're dealing with a second summer of COVID surge, hospitals being taxed again, and fights over mask mandates in schools. We'll hear from two doctors in Florida, get their perspective.
The U.S. military now has a vaccine mandate.
CDC has a new eviction moratorium, but do people know how to take advantage of it?
Let's start with Florida. Dr. Sean Kniff is a neurologist and emergency medicine physician at Memorial Regional Hospital and Memorial Hospital West in Broward County, Florida. And Dr. Sam Atala is a professor of surgery at the University of Central Florida. Dr. Atala, you're calling for a field hospital.
Right. Honestly, it's a plea for help. You know, we are in crisis mode, and that's for all area hospitals in Orlando. We are at a capacity. To give you an idea, the hospital that I just came to from to make rounds, so it basically has two floors. One is for all medicine care, so people with heart disease, liver disease, renal disease, etc., is dedicated entirely for medical care. The other one is for surgery. The medical floor is 100% COVID patients. The ICU is also 100% COVID patients. All of them, or let me say 99% of them, are unvaccinated. So we are in a crisis mode in healthcare because we no longer have the capacity to take care of people with other ailments. So I'm a surgeon. I'm specifically a colorectal surgeon. Right now, I'm struggling to be able to operate on patients with cancer. Every case that I operate on has to get approved by administration because, quite literally, there are no beds in the inn. So we really need a way to decompress the problem in Central Florida. And we need it soon. We need action.
Dr. Kniff, over in Broward County, Dr. Tullum mentions a very good point, I think, which is we keep talking in terms of the numbers of people in ICUs because of COVID, but the hospitals in your state are so oversaturated with patients that other people with other critical diseases are likely to die, right, because they can't get into surgery. Is that right?
Yeah, I mean, I don't want to extrapolate too much into predicting the future. I think if COVID has taught us anything, it's that there are no givens. And that would make a reasonable assumption for sure. We're seeing a lot of the same things that my colleague over there in Central Florida is seeing. For those of you who don't know, Broward County is a very populous area. It's where Fort Lauderdale is. And we have the same situation that we're approaching the numbers that we had close to the peak last year. From a personal experience, I'm seeing a lot more surprise patients, meaning that they'll come in with a pretty pedestrian type of injury. I'm a neurologist, but let's just say a brain injury from a motor vehicle accident or what have you, and they just coincidentally also happen to be COVID positive. So not only am I seeing a rise in just the COVID illness, which is, of course, taking up our ICU beds, but I'm also seeing all these surprise patients. Someone comes in with, say, a broken arm, and by coincidence, they happen to be COVID positive. So we're seeing a lot of COVID in the community, regular injuries. And our hospital is the same way. We're nearing bed capacity. Our ICUs are filling up once again. And we've put all elective surgeries on hold, to whether they're cancer or not, just because we don't have the capacity to handle those patients postoperatively, preoperatively, because every inch of the hospital is being used to treat our current patients.
Dr. Atala, back to you. The level of concern, frustration, exhaustion, I guess is the word, knowing that so much of this is preventable if people were just vaccinated?
Well, so I think, honestly, I'm not one to talk to the media very much, and I'm doing this for one reason, is to almost scream it out to the unvaccinated public. Adults, obviously, to please get vaccinated. We can change the course of this pandemic if the unvaccinated people understand the importance of that, not only for their own health, but to prevent the spread of COVID to others who may become ill. Let me give you an example. Literally yesterday, somebody told me a story about a 17-year-old who lost her sense of smell, was kind of feeling unwell, but still decided to go to Universal Studios, which is a theme park packed with people, didn't wear a mask, came in the next day, and sure enough, she's COVID positive. So maybe she's going to recover and heal. However, she probably spread the virus to thousands of other people. And this is a story that can be told over and over again. So honestly, the end of the pandemic is going to happen when our unvaccinated decide it's very important to do so.
I want to interrupt because I'm curious if either one of you guys have some feelings about the position of the governor of your state, because some of this is being fueled by his defiance, as we said at the beginning of the segment, not only about vaccine mandates, but even something as simple as mask mandates.
Honestly, I'm not too political about it. I mean, I think, and that's the problem, is we should not try to politicize a virus and a pandemic. Please, let's just listen to the CDC. Let's listen to our doctors who are experts in this, who are saying social distance, wear masks, and get vaccinated if you're of age 12 and up.
Yeah, I would totally agree with that as well. And that's what we would recommend. So our leaders are recommending down here, mask up, social distance, and get your vaccine. And I think it's a very wise medical decision, not only for yourself, but also for those around you and the American citizens at large. So I would echo those sentiments.
Do you have hope and or confidence that this is going to start to level off or get better? Or do you just buckle down because you're in this now and this might be quite a while?
Well, that's a very complex issue, and I don't want to be all doom and gloom about things, but coronaviruses and other droplet-borne and airborne type of illnesses tend to taper off in the summer. Any of these viruses do, largely because we have higher vitamin D levels across the country, which helps us prevent infection. So these are circulating all the time. And it's just that during the winter months, when vitamin D levels drop, we start to see more and more of these types of infections. So I'm worried now that we're seeing an atypical boom during the summer, that what does that portend for the coming winter months? So that has something really concerned. And a lot of this medical staff shorting across the country, places are offering enormous salaries just to get adequate nursing to attend to their patients. And I think that's going to fuel in some places, especially large cities, that's going to fuel a shortage of nurses and doctors who can handle the coming crisis. So I think it's going to compound itself in the coming months, unfortunately.
Dr. Atallah, very briefly, can you talk a little bit about children who are also in the hospital because of COVID? We've done a number of stories in the past few days about how many, many patients in hospitals are now young kids.
I mean, I can't really speak about the numbers in each of the hospitals, and especially because I basically treat adult patients, I don't actually know those numbers. But you're right, it's on the rise. And the problem is, especially in the teenage group, that cohort from, let's say, 12 to 19, they feel a sense of immunity, aka, you know, they feel, okay, if I got COVID, I'm not really going to get that sick and I'm going to be okay. The real problem is that they need to understand that without higher vaccination rates, the actual overall global pandemic will not end. In other words, we're going to continue to see high rates of unvaccinated folks in the hospital with severe COVID illnesses.
Dr. Sam Atallah, professor of surgery, University of Central Florida. Dr. Sean Kniff, neurologist, emergency medicine, Memorial Regional Hospital and Memorial Hospital West in Broward County. Thanks to you both.
The Pentagon is done messing around when it comes to COVID. The military now has a vaccine requirement for everyone in the armed forces.
About 70% have at least one shot, but will there be resistance or will the troops follow orders? With us is retired Army Colonel Peter Mansour, currently a military history professor at Ohio State, was a former executive officer to General David Petraeus in Iraq. So, Colonel, are the troops obligated to get the shots if the FDA hasn't, you know, officially approved the vaccines?
If the FDA has not yet approved the vaccine, the military can order the shot to be given, provided the president concurs with the order. And then it becomes a lawful general order and it has to be obeyed.
And there are plenty of vaccines already when you sign up that you have to have had, right? It's like 15, 17 of them. So this would just be added on to that list.
Absolutely. I've got, you know, you're already required to get chickenpox, hepatitis A, an annual flu shot, measles, mumps, rubella, polio, tetanus. And if you're going overseas, you have to get things like anthrax and typhoid and yellow fever. So this is nothing new. The only thing new about this is that the COVID shot has become a political football. And that is what's influencing what will probably be a small number of U.S. service personnel who refuse the shot.
Yeah, I was going to say, I mean, 70% have already had at least one dose, so about 30% have not as yet. Are you surprised, giving that list that you just gave of all the vaccines that they are obligated to get while in military service, that there's opposition to this one?
I'm not, because the military reflects the general population of the United States. And, of course, the general population of the United States has a significant minority who oppose the shot, mostly on political grounds. They don't want to be told what to do, or they don't believe what they're being told by the scientists. But I think in the end, most military personnel will salute and take the shot. And those that don't will probably be punished in some way and then eventually forced out of the service.
Yeah, you think it might come down to that for that small number, whatever it is, and you're going to have to make that choice. Is this worth it to give all the rest of it up?
Well, that's exactly right. And you won't get an honorable discharge. You're going to get something other than honorable. So I think in the end, most military personnel will obey the order to get the shot. But there will be a few that do not. And I'm sure that the media will pick up on those cases.
Since you're a professor of military history, can you think of an analogous situation?
I tried to think of one. And what I came up with is during World War II, malaria was racking our troops in the Southwest Pacific. And so they were ordered to take a drug called atabrine, which is still around. It's an anti-malarial and it turns your skin yellow. But the rumor around the troops was that it caused you to become impotent. And so a lot of troops refused to take it or would throw it away. And it resulted in officers actually looking at every troop as he swallowed the drug every day. And it was very effective in eliminating malaria among U.S. service personnel in the Pacific Theater.
Peter Mansour, retired colonel, U.S. Army, served as a former executive officer to General David Petraeus in Iraq, and now professor of military history at Ohio State.
Coming up after a short break, another ban on evictions, but how many people really know about it? The federal eviction moratorium expired at the end of July, but the Biden administration found a workaround, and the CDC implemented a new one.
Are people aware they can get help because of it? KYW's Matt Leon talked to Holly Beck, an attorney in the housing units with Community Legal Services of Philadelphia. She explained how the new moratorium is the same, but also different.
It is similar in that it prohibits eviction lockouts for tenants who are facing COVID-related financial hardship, meet the eligibility criteria, and sign the declaration form and give it to their landlords. It is different, however, in that previous CDC eviction moratoria applied nationwide. This newest moratoria, which was extended this week, only applies in particular counties, those counties that the CDC has determined to have substantial increases in COVID-19 cases.
And this, if it remains in place, would be set for the to expire the first week in October. Am I correct?
That's correct.
Now, one of the things, because there was a few days there from where the last moratorium expired and this new one was put in place. And correct me if I'm wrong, but I thought that the federal government thought it didn't have the authority to put another one in place. But then after a few days, they did. Can you kind of shed some light onto what transpired here?
Really, all I know and all I can share is that there was a back and forth between the presidential administration and Congress about who needed to act and who was going to act. And at the end of the day, it was the CDC administration themselves who issued the order, not Congress. More than that, I don't honestly know.
So when we are talking about this, I know billions of dollars have been allocated from the federal government to help renters, to help landlords. But in reading and talking to other people, it seems like only a fraction of that money has gotten to where it needs to go. Number one, is that the case? And number two, what seems to be the problem? Why are we not able to get this flowing in all the directions it needs to flow in?
Well, in January, Congress rightly recognized the dire and enormous need for rental assistance nationwide. There are millions and millions of tenants who lost work or hours or had increased caregiving responsibilities who could not suddenly make their rent. And Congress allocated enormous sums to states and counties across the country for the purpose of making landlords whole and keeping tenants housed during the pandemic. The delay has been that each county or state or city, whoever is controlling the flow of rental assistance, has had to create an entirely new program for the screening of tenants, the processing of applications, and the disbursement of funds to landlords. And that has taken an enormous amount of time. So in Philadelphia County, for example, money is being sent to landlords every day. Applications are being approved every day, but there are still thousands of applications that are in the review process now. And tenants who are applying every day with their landlords to try to catch up on their arrears and prevent an eviction from happening. And so this is why we are asking the courts to reinstate their pause on lockouts, particularly for tenants who have pending applications for emergency rental assistance that could be approved any day. But in the meantime, they are facing the threat of imminent eviction lockouts.
And you mentioned this new moratorium only in certain counties that fall under CDC criteria. Do you have in front of you in the Philadelphia area, you know, specifically in Pennsylvania, the counties that would affect?
I'm not sure about the rest of the state, but in the Philadelphia area, Philadelphia and all of the counties around Philadelphia, Bucks, Montgomery, Chester, and Delaware counties all are classified as having substantial rises in COVID cases and therefore are covered by the CDC moratorium. And of course, within those counties, in order to be protected from eviction lockouts, tenants need to sign the declaration that we have available on phillytenant.org. Phillytenant.org is a resource that we at Community Legal Services and our partners in the Philadelphia Eviction Prevention Project have updated continuously throughout the pandemic with information about rental assistance and tenants' resources. Tenants can go to phillytenant.org, find the CDC declaration. They have to sign it and they have to give it to their landlord. As long as they can truthfully say that they meet all the eligibility criteria, this protects them from an eviction lockout until the expiration of the CDC moratorium in October.
You talked about, we talked about the federal money not getting where it needs to be, that cities, states had to create, you know, new programs to funnel all this money through. It seems to me so much of this federal government aid has been issued, and rightfully so, on the idea that we're in the middle of emergency, we've got to get money out the door. You saw that with the stimulus checks. You saw that with the enhanced unemployment. It seems counterproductive and hard to believe that a federal program would be counterproductive. But why would they require new programs to be put in place when almost by definition that's going to slow down? Or are there really not places that were already in place that could have handled this influx and done it in a quicker manner?
Some counties already had rental assistance programs, and the eligibility requirements for the new COVID-related rental assistance just had to be implemented. Other counties did not have rental assistance programs and needed to create them from scratch. Either way, the federal rental assistance money comes with some strict eligibility screening criteria. And so, cities and counties and states need to collect documentation from tenants and from landlords, and they need to have the staff, the humans, to review the applications, to communicate with the parties, and to process the payments to the landlords. And all of that takes time and it takes resources.
A lot of the attention, and understandably so, over the last year and a half has been on people getting evicted. But I would imagine there's a high number of landlords who have tried their best to act in good faith, and it just becomes untenable financially to continue to not have money taken in. How much of a concern, you know, what's the level of alarm, not just with people that would eventually be facing eviction, but with landlords and, you know, property owners that just can't make it unless this money gets where it needs to be?
Well, we are certainly hearing that from landlord representatives in Philadelphia. Any landlords who are in that position, I encourage them to go to phlrentassist.org if they're in Philadelphia County. Landlords can initiate applications for COVID-19 related rental assistance themselves. And there may be some documents that the tenant needs to sign, but many landlords are initiating applications, assisting their tenants who may have tech limitations or disabilities. They're assisting their tenants with completing their portions of the applications so that this money can get out the door and tenancies can be preserved and landlords can keep their properties.
USC and Kaiser Permanente researchers say people who don't have their asthma under control have a worse battle with COVID than those who control their asthma. They found those with uncontrolled asthma are more likely to end up in the hospital. One idea is that people with asthma have hyperreactive airways, which puts them at a higher risk of getting hit harder by COVID. The researchers say this shows the importance of getting your asthma treated with medications to bring it under control.
This is an Odyssey original. You can find us on the Odyssey app, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and Stitcher.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $150 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $150 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$150 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
In a world of endless notifications, there could be an important one you're missing. Your kidneys may be signaling an SOS. With high blood pressure or type 2 diabetes, your kidneys could be warning you of early signs of damage, which may put you at higher risk for events like heart attack or stroke. But there's a simple test that can help spot a hidden signal. Ask your doctor about a urine test called UACR to help detect kidney disease and heart risk early. To learn more, visit detectthesos.com today.
In communities across the country, hourly Amazon employees earn an average of over $23 an hour with opportunities to grow their career and their paycheck. Learn more at aboutamazon.com.
Did you know your credit card points and miles can lose value to inflation? Credit card companies often reduce the redemption value of your points and miles. Now, imagine a credit card with rewards that can grow in value. With the Gemini credit card, you can earn Bitcoin or one of over 50 other cryptos instantly with no annual fee. Every swipe at the store or gas pump earns you instant rewards deposited straight to your account. Plus, sign up now for a $200 Bitcoin bonus to kickstart your rewards. Visit Gemini.com/card today. Check out the link in the description for more information on rates and fees. Again, if you're looking to invest in Bitcoin but don't know where to start, the Gemini credit card makes it easy.
The Gemini credit card is issued by WebBank. In order to qualify for the $200 crypto intro bonus, you must spend $3,000 in your first 90 days. Terms apply. Some exclusions apply to instant rewards in which rewards are deposited when the transaction posts. This content is not investment advice, and trading crypto involves risk. For more details on rates, fees, and other cost information, see rates and fees. The Gemini credit card may not be used to make gambling-related purchases.